Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody, the Saturday marathon of combat sports has officially come to its conclusion, and it ended with Chris Cyborg picking up a unanimous decision win over Arlene Blanco in the main event of Bellator 279. Something we didn't really expect to see, but Arlene Blanco toughed it out. She made it to the end. And Chris Cyborg retains her title. We also have a brand new interim bantamweight champion, Rafion Stotts, becomes the first fighter to stop Juan Archuleta via strikes. Did so in the third round. He moves on in the Grand Prix. He will take on the winner of Danny Sabatello versus Leandro Ego. Those two will fight on June 24th. Stotts will await the winner and put that title on the line for the first time. We also had Patchy Mix advancing in the Bellator Bantamweight Grand Prix with a decision win over Kyoji Horig. We have the UFC event. Jessica Andrade closed the show with a incredible submission, one of the best submissions of the year. It'll definitely be in the nominations. We're doing the awards, the standing arm triangle, whatever that was. I mean, that was absolutely incredible. You're not going to see that all that often.
All right. I can't maintain this gimmick the whole time. But yes, my Raptor's still alive. Great day of I think a really good day of combat sports, depending what your expectations were for the respective events, Fury White and Bellator 279 and UFC Vegas 52. But I feel like if you tuned in and you were like me and you kind of watched a little bit of everything and you picked and choose and you're strategic, I think like you had a good time. I don't know. Jose Youngs is also here. What do you think?
What I was a big fan of is it seemed like when one would end, it would kind of go right into the other, if that makes sense. So like Fury White ended, and then I think I missed the first two fights of the UFC card, but it went right into that. And then when the UFC main event ended, I flipped over to Bellator, and like the main card, or no, I caught the last round of the Deonte Medeiros Manuel Sanchez fight, which is obviously appeared to be just an absolute banger, and that went right into the main event. So if you timed it out and you watched all three cards, you probably saw all of the important things, because it seems that when one ended, it went right into the other. So stellar programming all around. I feel bad for my East Coast folks, though, because what time is it for you guys? Like 2 a.m. almost?
It is almost 2 in the morning. We should note, by the way,
We just got a fresh comment. Uh-huh. Hold on one second. Let me get this gentleman
it's
set
not,
up
tell
here.
Me it's not. Yeah, tell me it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, you know. Are you?
Tell me it's, oh, my oh, God. Lord. We told him he was not needed.
I know.
We told him he was not needed.
I wasn't ready for this.
If I don't do this, then I have to watch the post-slims, so I'd rather fucking do this.
I was about to say, technically, we're saying all this is past tense. The weekend is not over. We have three Bellator 279 post-slims that are going on right now. So for anyone, if you can please multitask, listen to our show, whatever you listen to our show on, please keep that on. And obviously then pop up another screen for the beautiful, beautiful Bellator 279 post-slims. But yeah, there is a lot to talk about. I don't know if we want to go in chronological order or if we want to go as usual UFC first. Jose, again, let's we'll continue with you. What would you What do you think should lead off the show? If you had to pick, what is the most? I mean, I shouldn't say most momentous. I think we know what the most important combat sports event of the day was, but most conversation worthy.
Ooh, that's tough because personally, I was obviously hyper invested in the boxing match, but I think just off of social traffic and social media traffic, the UFC did obviously bigger. Especially Jessica Andrade, like 10 out of, like not a 10 out of 10, but like a much better call out than last week's main event. But if we're talking about, you know, the like Bellator Grand Prix, like moving on, a new interim title, Aleem Aleem McFarlane loses and Chris Cyborg goes the distance. I feel like there's more talking points in Bellator, but I have a feeling our audience would probably tune in more for the UFC. So trust your judgment, AK. You know it to be true.
Jed, before you came on, we were saying, like, you know, it was kind of easier if you plan to watch all three events to watch like little bits and pieces. Jose was saying they somewhat conveniently kind of one led into the other, so there wasn't as much like overlap as there had to be. What were you mostly focused on today, Jed? What events, whether for work or out of your interest, were you kind of covering and had your like your most focus on?
I was working Bellator, so that had my most focus. But I think Jose is right. Like, I didn't miss anything from any of the other stuff that happened. There was very little overlap, frankly. There's some of the overlap for the early prelims for Bellator. And then there was just a little bit of the Anthony Medeiros fight over on Bellator, kind of clashing with the main event for the UFC. But, I mean, shouts to our girl because she got it done so quick that it just didn't matter. So timing really, really worked out well. So if you were a combat sports fan, today was a really good day for you, frankly.
You know, it's rare that we give Bellator the lead because it's rare that we go on right after Bellator. As people know, usually do post-fight mm-hmm. show. It's based around the UFC schedule. So let's talk about Bellator first. We just saw an awesome main event. I know producer Casey was very happy. I think he feels a little vindicated with how Chris Cyborg and Arlene Blanco performed in that a fight that a lot of people didn't have going the distance. I wasn't one of them. I thought it would be the under, sort of the 1.5 that we'd thrown out there. But no, Arlene Blanco this time, after getting submitted in their first fight in the second round, goes all 5 rounds. Really, really entertaining fight. She had Cyborg hurt many, many times. Jed, is this a legit fight of the year candidate? We had one earlier this week, Clay Collard, Jeremy Stephens. What do you think?
No, it's not a fight of the year candidate. It was a great fight. It was way more entertaining than it had any right to be, but it's one of those fights that has the tint of expectation that's coloring our perception here, because we all thought that we've already seen this. And then especially that first round, Blanco got just hammer drops and it looked like it was over. And then she kind of, you know, came back and gave a great show, a great account of herself. Absolutely nothing to take away from Arlene Blanco other than she is tougher than a $2 steak. But her moments were few and far between, and mostly that was one-way traffic. But because it was not an absolute bulldozing, then it looked – we just feel differently about it than if we came to this without expectation. So, again – great performance from Blanco. Solid fight. More fun than I certainly thought it was going to be, but not a fight of the year contender.
Jose, do you agree? Not a fight of the year contender, but one of the more memorable title defenses of Chris Cyborg's career?
Yeah, it was a fun fight, but I don't even think if you include the PFL, boxing, UFC, Bellator, I don't even think it was the best fight of the week. I still think Jeremy Stephens was the best fighter of the week, but that's okay. Like Chris Cyborg versus Arlene was very fun, and it doesn't have to be the top spot for everyone to appreciate it. I just think the fact that, you know, Arlene just was so goddamn tough and Chris Cyborg was just, you know, doing Chris Cyborg things. It was definitely one of the most entertaining women's fights I've seen, and like easily one of the most entertaining featherweight title fights or women's featherweight fights I've seen. It was a lot of fun, but it wasn't the best. I still give that to Collard versus Stevens.
Producer Casey, can I get your little, can I summon your little bubble here? Cause I know you have a take on this. Again, like I said, I know you were someone who was positive about this matchup when it was made. And again, it was really fun to watch. Oh, there he is. There's a little bubble. Casey, what did you think? Let them know. Let people know. Let people know. Preach about this main event.
Oh, I just thought. I kind of agree with both you guys said. It was just a freaking. Okay, first of all, I understand everyone wanted Cats and Gano. Ooh, wait, I got two bubbles on me. Sorry, I know everyone wanted Cats and Gano. It didn't happen. We can't do anything about that. Cats and Gano didn't take the fight, and I thought Blinkout earned this rematch. And but the main part is like rematches very rarely go exactly as the first fight goes. And I know everyone's like, especially at the high level, yeah, if this is like, you know, just a low level fight, then you know, whatever. But Blinkout, she earned her rematch, and she's tough as nails, $2 steak, all that. And I thought it was just a entertaining fight, and it's freaking Cyborg. Like, and Jose says this a lot. He's like, you just take every moment you can to appreciate this. And we have fighters like Cyborg, you know, once in a generation type of fighter to come into mixed martial arts. Just if you have a chance to watch it, freaking watch it. And her and Blinkout put a freaking awesome scrap up tonight, and it was a fight the fans needed, especially I guess after the kind of the disappointment with Alima's fight, you know. So I think they really needed that kind of fun, you know, Hawaiian, no scrap. So it was great. I loved it. Oh, we have Mr. Heck back.
Oh, please, Mike, come back. There he is.
I'm here.
All right.
Can you hear me?
How are we doing?
Yes. Perfect.
Would you like to retake the hosting reins, sir?
Okay. I don't know what you guys talked about.
We decided
Chris Cyborg versus Arlene was not the best fight of the week, but certainly very fun.
It was very fun.
Yeah, we're leading with Bellator.
Bellator because it just ended.
Yes, that's a good point. Jed, I'm glad that you're here. I didn't think you would be here, so color me surprised and color me happy that you are here, because I feel like you're the right man to ask this question, because I think – the biggest question coming out of this fight was, should Arlene Blanco, should she have milked the knee, the illegal knee?
Oh, of course.
And become the champion. She could be the champion right now. Now, of course, we're going to support her for her warrior spirit, the Anthony Smith inside of her for going on here. But did she make a mistake not milking it and taking the DQ and having some gold around her waist right now? And saving herself like an extra 20 minutes of pain.
Hell yeah, she did. Get that bag, baby. There's one motto in this game, and it is get the bag. Like, I don't know if she actually would have gotten the DQ win. I don't know how that was going to go. I honestly, she may well have, because Jason Herzog is actually a good referee. You notice how he took a point, because he's a good referee and not like a bad one. So like that maybe would have been a DQ win. And look, when you're a champion, they call you champ forever. That doesn't go away. No matter the circumstances with which that belt got wrapped around your waist, Cyborg, you've heard me talk about it plenty. Don't cheat. Don't do the illegal thing, especially in a fight that you are winning handily and don't need to do the illegal thing. You could just not do the illegal thing and it's all fine. So sure should have. Because all of our, you know, good feelings for Arlene Blanco, they're going to last about the next 2 hours, and everyone's going to go to sleep and go back to forgetting that Arlene Blanco exists and put on a hell of a performance tonight. So, yeah, she should have absolutely got that title, because legends never die, baby. And that's a legend move in my book.
I'm sorry, kid. What was I about to say?
You were about to tell us why Arlene Blanco should have taken a dive to get that belt and that chair.
Yeah, look, Mike was saying I'm supposedly supposed to be the angel to your devil, but I admit I was feeling a little impish. I may or may not, in our, you know, shared work Slack chat, have immediately said, I think, like, Blanco, take the DQ. I don't crave chaos, but I mean, how amazing would it have been for Arlene Blanco to say, I'm one of the people who has a win over Chris Cyborg, whether by DQ or by anything else. Also, it would have just been fit so well with all the weird, like the Bellator strangeness we've had. We had the Julia, somewhat questionable stoppage from Mike Beltran in the Juliana Velasquez, Liz Carmouche fight. We have the no contest with Corey Anderson and Vadim Nemkov. And then and some people would even say there was controversy with the Adrian McKee, Patricio Pitbull fight. But I mean, not really. It's just a close fight, close entertaining fight, right? So how cool would it have been to have this, have that there, this run of Bellator events end with a friggin' Chris Sarmorg losing her title by DQ? So I don't know. I don't think Blankau should have done that. I don't know how much more money a Bellator champion makes. Probably more, but so much so that she would want to, you know, I don't know, have to deal with kind of all that Aljamain Sterling drama. And I just think instinctually, it's not something that Arlene Blanco would do. I don't know her personally, but just from, you know, what we know of her career, I think her taking a DQ win, it's almost unfathomable. She just wouldn't do it. She didn't even, the fact that she didn't even try and milk it was kind of shocking. But Jed, these fighters are made from sterner stuff than you and I. So, you know, it's easy for us to say, oh, they should have done this kind of sneaky thing to advance their careers. But that's not how they're, you know, that's not how they're wired.
Can you guys hear me now? Are we good?
Yes.
Yeah, you are back, sir.
Oh, for God's sakes. My apologies. I don't know what the hell's going on here. Jose, your thoughts on this? Because I don't feel like she'd get the same amount of flack as, like, Aljo got. I just don't think in this situation. I think more people in the realm of like social media and MMA fans, they'd probably be like, this is a pretty smart move on her part. Your thoughts on that whole situation?
I think this is even a non-issue, because if she was legitimately hurt and couldn't continue, don't continue. If she can continue, then continue. And if she can continue and she says she can't, then she's a liar. And I don't care for liars at all in any aspect of my life, especially in sports, especially in combat sports. So this is a non-issue. If she can continue, she can continue, and she can continue. Don't be a liar, kids. Don't listen to Jed.
Look, that's great. I support strong, upstanding moral citizens, but kids, the world's gonna bite you in the ass one day. So just be ready for that.
All right, so let's talk about where Chris Cyborg goes from here, because she's in a very interesting spot, Jed Meshew. She's in a very interesting spot. Come July, she becomes a free agent, and she can go fight anywhere. Now, you and I have talked about this many times. In the world of, like, prize fighting, she's winning the prize fighting game. She's getting very winnable fights, and she's making a ton of money. And this is a fun fight, but most of the time she just runs through her opponents and makes that bag that we all talk about. But if we're talking about legacy, you got Kayla Harrison over in the PFL. I don't think she's going back to the UFC anytime soon. There's money to be made everywhere. Do you think Bellator tries to get her in there one more time? This is probably the result that Bellator disliked the most, right? So what do we do with Chris Cyborg now? Do you think they try to get her in for one more, or do you think this could be the last time we saw her inside the Bellator cage tonight?
They'll probably try. I don't know if they will, just because, like, this wasn't a total steamrolling, so maybe Cyborg wants to take some time off to recover, because she, you know, got hit some, which is not a thing that happens to her all that often, frankly. So maybe they try and get her in before it runs up. I said earlier, either this week or last week, I frankly don't remember at this point, I stand in the same corner. I think Cyborg holds all the cards in this situation. I think her inevitable endpoint is going to be PFL. It's just a matter of how that goes. And my belief is that because Scott Coker is really tied into having her, Cyborg can basically demand whatever she wants. You know, there's a dollar number that wouldn't make sense for them, but if she just comes to Scott Coker and says, hey, I'll re-sign for 6 months, and during that time period, I will fight Kat Zingano, and you have the onus is on you to figure it out with PFL to make this Kayla Harrison fight, and if not, and that 6 months is up, then I'm going to PFL or whatever, then I think they just have to do it, right? Like, what's Bellator just going to let her walk for nothing when they could get some more out of her? So that's kind of still how I think it's going to go. But all roads are pointing to a fight between her and Kayla Harrison by next summer is my guess on the timeline.
Cool. All right. So Chris gets the win. We'll see where she goes.
We talked about this on the preview show quite a bit, so we'll move on to what Rafion Stotts did.
I just want to say one real quick thing, because everyone kept talking about how the timing might be a big factor, because Chris, you don't want to sit on the Cyborg versus Cale Harrison. After being in a fight like that, it probably helps out Chris Cyborg. That should take a little bit of time off to get ready for Cale Harrison.
Oh no, I agree with you. But you would think,
like, I'm just circling back to in the 100%. Preview. I think it was either preview or BTL or something. We talked about that.
Yeah, 100%. Like, in terms of getting ready for a Kayla fight, this is probably the best case scenario for Chris. But in terms of Bellator and her contract situation, they probably thought Chris is just going to run through Arlene Blanco, maybe get her back in there one more time before the contract expires, get her paid a little more, maybe try to work something out in between then. But we'll see what happens. It's an interesting story right now in 2022. Just like the Bantamweight Grand Prix, AK, Rafion Stotts is the new interim Bantamweight champion for Bellator. He stops Juan Archuleta, becomes the first fighter to do so via strikes, does so in the third round. I'm curious, AK, how did you have that fight scored after two rounds?
Hold on. I have to talk about his... God, yeah, I'm sorry. It's hard for me not to just jump ahead to the knockout and his post-fight speech. It was just it caught me off guard a little bit. Not because I'm not familiar with Rafion Stotts. I think after his last one, I think a lot of people sort of became aware of like how charismatic and entertaining this guy could be. But man, we criticize Big John all the time, but at the very least, he got out of the way here and just gave Rafion Stotts the mic and just let him say whatever the hell he wanted. And it was hilarious. So I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know if I can answer your question. Everything up until the head kick or the head knee kick, and then the post fight promo is a bit of a blur. I want to repeat what he said after, but I just know I can't. It's filled with so much profanity, and I can't. So I won't. But I will say, like, man, regardless of how people thought the fight was going up until that point. Damn, if you didn't see that finish and you're not a believer that Rafion Stotts is like, you know, a serious major player at 135, just in general, not just in Bellator, but looking at Bellator, UFC, any other bantamweight division that you want to talk about, I mean, you're just not paying attention. And I hope, we say this all the time, I know, I hope Bellator knows what they have with this guy and that they can find a way to properly promote him and give him the platforms he needs, because he can really be, I think he can be like a Michael Chandler level star for them. People can, you know, gauge that in the broader, you know, combat sports scene as much as they want, but I think that's pretty good. And I think Rafion Stotts can be that.
Jose, your thoughts on Rafion Stotts' performance and his ceiling with this promotion and in the sport and in this division?
I think what hurts his ceiling, I think his like his long term ceiling, is he is 33, because I think a lot of people like they're just finding out who he is. So I bet a lot of people think that he's like this young up and coming guy, kind of like AJ McKee, but he's not. He's on the other side of 30. I think he might even be younger than Israel. I mean, older than Israel Adesanya, if like not like a year older, like right on that level. So he's no spring chicken, but he just keeps winning. And I think this performance against Juan Archuleta is exactly what he needed, because, you know, he's had three straight decisions. Everyone was like, oh, who's the dark horse? Sabatelli, who just won yesterday. Is he the dark horse to do it? Or now that Sergio Pettis is out, or is Kyoji Horiguchi truly the best bantamweight in the world, because he was so close to beating Kyoji Horiguchi? And Rafion Stotts just melted Juan Archuleta, like you said, the first person to do it. So I think this was the exact performance he needs to get people to want to tune in to watch his next fight. And now I bet a lot of people are going to be favoring him to win. And before he went live, we even talked about it, like a possible matchup between Sabatelli and Stotts is like literally, like we said, say this all the time. These great fighters need a foil and someone that can like talk back and get in these war of words, like, you know, the Connor and Aldos or the Anderson Silva's, Chael Sonnens, the John Jones Rashads or Cormier's. And that was what was really hurting Amanda Nunes from being like overly popular, because she was clearly the best female fighter of all time at one point, arguably still is. I still think she is, but she didn't have that foil until Juliana Pena showed up. And if Stotts and Sabatelli Imagine that build. That is going to be a lot of John, both in and out and post fight. So I'm all here for it. I think this is exactly what he needed. He just melted a dude, and then there's a guy that grinds people out very dominantly in his same side of the bracket. It made me that much more excited. And like I say all the time, kids, don't lie, and they're prize fighters first and foremost. So there you go. Now everyone is more excited to watch them fight.
Jed, I know you are now on the Danny Sabatello train. Of course, Danny's got to fight Leandro Higo on June 24th in scenic Uncasville, Connecticut, Mohegan Sun Arena. I assume Danny Sabatello is going to do exactly what he did on Friday to Leandro Higo, but we can't assume everything in MMA. But
Leandro Higo effing sucks. we all learned that from Danny Sabatello. He told us all, and so I don't think the man's a liar. I think the man's a hero. And I'm 100% with Jose. Give me Javier Stotts and Danny Sabatello. That's going to be all sorts of awesome. That fight might not be awesome, frankly, but everything else about it is going to be gangbusters. So I'm all in for that. I know we technically are going to have to watch Leandro Higo get beat up for 15 minutes, but that's fine. You know, happy to watch Leandro Higo get beat up for 3 fives, and then move on with our lives. And it's going to
be 5 fives, Jed. It'll be 5 fives.
Oh, it is five. Cause they're in the actual tournament now instead of the play in or whatever. Well, you know, that's just more time for me and Danny Sabs to start bonding, to get, you know, become friends. I'm really excited, about what's going to happen. It's going to be awesome.
So great win for Stotts. Juan Archuleta was not happy with the stoppage, but he has since gone on social media and he said that it's okay. So he supports Mike Beltran, who I think Mike kind of needed that too, because he had kind of a rough night on Friday, took a little bit of a beating for the finish of the Velasquez fight, for Liz Carmouche becoming the champion. And so maybe Mike Beltran, maybe the pillars have sort of evened out. We had another bantamweight Grand Prix fight on this card too. Patchy Mix beats Kyoji Horiguchi. Hey, Kaylee, what did you think of that? What did you think of Patchy Mix going in there? And by the way, Patchy Mix looked like a featherweight compared to a lightweight looking Kyoji Horiguchi. Did he not?
Patchy Mix is really good. I think a lot of us expected, like when the first round happened, I don't think any of us were too concerned for Kyoji Horiguchi. We were kind of like, Patchy Mix is super talented, bigger guy, great grappler. It's probably going to take Horiguchi, you know, some time to kind of figure out this guy's style. And he'll probably lose one of the first round and have to, and you know, start turning things around in the second round and then eventually win a decision or find a finish later. But this is the best version of Mix we've seen. He was super focused. I think he even kind of said after, like, I know people think like I'm that talented guy who can't put together a whole fight. He did against one of the best, lighter weight fighters in the world. The size disparity is, I hate to keep bringing it up, but it's definitely a factor. Kyoji Horiguchi has shown for sure he's an elite 135er, but I personally would really like to see, a flyweight division in Bellator. And for Kyoji to be able to compete at that weight class, which he can make easily. You know, he's just fighting at bantamweight because they don't cut weight when he was over in Japan. He's fighting in Japan. Bellator doesn't have a flyweight division. And I'm sure if they never made it, he'd be fine. He'd be happy. He'd be competitive. But he is – I hate people – I hope, you know, people don't see him taking a loss like this and think like, oh, well, you know, Horiguchi's lost it or he's not one of the elite fighters in the world. He is. He's just, you know, especially in a fight where there's so much grappling – it's going to favor a guy that's that much bigger a lot. And he's eventually going to run into those guys. Even his fights with Darren Caldwell weren't pretty. He won both those fights, but there was a lot of him having to deal with some serious, serious grappling against a guy who was a lot bigger than him. So, disappointing. I think disappointing for a lot of the Horiguchi fans out there. I'm not sure how this is going to affect his standing in the MMA fighting global ranking. Certainly a big boost for Patchy Mix at the end and well-deserved. Again, he's only lost to like really strong elite guys. So it was a great performance for him. I don't want to dwell on the negative. I know for a lot of people, it wasn't fun seeing Horiguchi neutralized like that. But let's focus on the positive here and say, hey, we've got another legit, super legit guy at 135 pounds, the best division in all of MMA, Patchy Mix.
Oh, let's not get started on this because we don't want to get Jed all fired up.
I don't think anyone here would disagree with that. I can't imagine anyone here would disagree with that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said it.
I would, but I'm not going to right now.
Yeah, we don't have that kind of time, that's for sure. Yeah, this is a fun event. Apparently, there's still fights happening. There's sure. Muslims going on.
So Miko Inaba just picked up a sick knockout.
Yeah, that was pretty
glad she was on this card to begin with.
That was a good post-slam.
Yes, well done. Justine Kiesch defeats Ali Malay McFarlane. That was kind of a stunning fight. But Justine Kiesch, big upset win there. Yancy Medeiros, Emmanuel Sanchez had themselves quite the fight. Jed, I know you were a big fan of that one.
Oh, dude, that fight was a banger. I do just want to speak on Kyoji real fast to say two things. The first is that I hope one day to love something as much as Kyoji loves giving up his back because he just gave it to Patchy every time that they were in an entanglement. It's like, here, please take this. I don't want my own back. You can have it. And the second is I just want to see him in the UFC. I know that that's not a fun thing to say, but like, this fight did not do anything for me as far as Patchy Mix. Like, I thought he did the things he needed to, and credit to him for that. But mostly I came away from this thinking, okay, Patchy Mix can go 5 rounds, which is the only real thing I saw from him, as opposed to the Archuleta fight where he clearly tired out down the stretch. And yeah, he's just a full weight class bigger than Kyoji. And Kyoji is really a flyweight, and he may or may not be the best flyweight in the world. And boy, I'd love to find out. I would love to watch that man fight Brandon Moreno or Davidson Figueiredo or anyone else, frankly. Or, you know, Kai Kara France is now in that mix. I want to see those fights because I think there's a really good chance that he is the best flyweight in the world. And all of it sucked. It sucked that the UFC just kind of let him go, even though his run through Ryzen and Bellator has been fun in a whole different way. They let him go right when he was about to become great. They had him when he was early. And now I just want to see him fight other people that are the best in the world at flyweight, because I think he's actually the best flyweight in the world. So that's all I have to say on that. And then, yeah, Yancy Medeiros, Emmanuel Sanchez was exactly what we all thought it was going to be. It was dope as hell.
It was a great fight. Yes, I think a lot of people agree with you on the Horiguchi chatter. And I think one last thing on Patchy Mix before we move on to the UFC card is I don't think anyone questions the skill set of Patchy Mix. He's had struggles with this weight cut of making it to 135, and you can see it in the cage just how big he is for the weight class. But he made it here, no issues, and we'll see if he can do it again, because that's the one thing that really hurts him as far as being a fighter goes. His last couple fights, he's either missed weight or the weight cut has really hindered his performance. And looks like everything was smooth sailing out, you know, heading into this fight. And he looked fantastic against Horiguchi and picks up the big upset win. So congratulations to Patchy Mix. He moves on. He will fight the winner of Enrique Barzola and Magomed Magomedov. Those two guys will fight on June 24th for 5 rounds as well. And then that guy will go on to fight Patchy Mix in the semifinals.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase every day. Then grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Let's head over to Las Vegas to the Ultimate Fighting Championship, the UFC Apex. We'll start with you, Jose. Jessica Andrade took her 3 minutes and 13 seconds to get the job done. I think all of us picked Jessica Andrade to win this fight. She does it very quickly, and she does it with a standing arm triangle choke. This was quite the submission. She is a bulldog, to say the least. Your thoughts on the performance, the submission, and where you put this one thus far in terms of will this be a submission of the year nominee at the end of the year in your eyes?
Yeah, it's going to be a nominee. It's going to, like, right now it's obviously like top. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't think of a whole lot better. It's clearly top 10, top five. It's going to be up there. It's like I've said this a lot in other sports. Anytime you're the first to do something, you just kind of automatically, in my mind, like, get thrown into that category of, you know, end of the year awards. Or if you do something like when Miguel Cabrera won MVP, he wasn't more valuable than Mike Trout, but he was the first person in for the cycle since 1967. You have to take that into account. Same with Russell Westbrook, averaged triple-double. Was not the most valuable player, but he just made history. Anytime you make history, you got to kind of throw yourself into the end of the year award category. But awesome performance. Jessica Andrade is clearly showed she should be a strawweight this whole time. She just kept having success at flyweight until she ran into Valentina. I think she even said that herself, that strawweight is her home from this point moving forward. And the big thing I took away from this fight is, my God, do I want to see her rematch Rose Namajunas for a third time. I think they're two, like, her, Joanna, Whaley, and Rose are the four best, you know, strawweights in the world. Marina, I think, is sitting there number five. Obviously, Carla's fantastic. She could easily, she's already beaten Rose. I just think Rose has gotten so much better. And I would put maybe all of those ladies I just mentioned maybe a notch above Carla. That being said, Carla deserves this fight. That is not the conversation we're going to have right now. I just really want to see Jessica Andrade fight Rose Namajunas, because Jessica Andrade can knock you out. She can grind you out. She can drop you on your head. She can submit you standing. She can pretty much win a fist fight any way she wants. And I just want to see her fight for another championship at strawweight again, because she is so supremely talented. And I think taking gender out of the conversation, you have to put her in the category of most exciting fighters in MMA, regardless of weight class, regardless of gender. She is never in a boring fight. She's either going out there and just dismantling people, or she's going against the best of the best and she's losing. I'm going to put her in that category. I don't know about you all guys, but I think in terms of females, clearly one of the best, and in all of MMA, clearly one of the best. I think it's about time we start talking about Jessica Andrade in these conversations of best fighters, regardless of gender, in the world.
Yeah. I mean, you're just tugging on Casey's heartstrings here.
I'm not even tugging on Casey, so I don't care who agrees with me. It's just facts, man.
Hey, listen, anyone who doesn't agree with you is a little bit crazy right now. When you see Jessica Andrade on a poster, you're like, oh, damn, you know, something crazy is going to happen. So, Jed, I know we talked about this in the preview show, but if you're Marina Rodriguez right now, you're probably just like, damn it, I'm not fighting for the title next, am I?
You're saying, damn it, I have to fight that woman next? That's what you're thinking.
That's Jose is probably right. I mean, I think a little bit will depend on how the title fight goes. Because if Rose wins, then maybe they would just slot in Andrade, because they've got the two. And at this point, I think that Andrade is at worst the third best strawweight in the world. And so, I like Jose, I'd love to see that run back, because we talked about this before. I thought Andrade at least deserved a draw in that second fight with Rose, and would have, I think, pretty obviously won that fight if it was five rounds instead of three, based on how it was going towards the end. But neither here nor there. Yeah, I think Marina's just going to have to fight her, which means Marina's about to get got, and that's very unfortunate for her, but sometimes that's how the world works. And yeah, that's just a tough out, because she's not going to get to sit and get it, especially with Joanna and Wiley Zhang fighting. She's going to have to fight one. That's the one she's going to have to fight, and she's probably going to lose, because there are like three women on the planet I would pick to win a fist fight against Jessica Andrade, and Marina Rodriguez ain't one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think Andrade is going to fight whoever wins that fight. Because even if Carla wins, Carla already has a win over Marina, and it wasn't all that long ago. So it's not you can do that.
Carla wins, but I mean, you're going to run Rose right back.
Even after two, maybe. Maybe.
I think they'll just there's no rhyme or reason to what they're doing at the top of the thing. They gave Wiley Zhang an immediate rematch after Rose sparked her. There was absolutely no reason to do it. They're just like, whatever.
Yeah, I guess you have a point. Nothing is assumed, but I feel
MMA
like
MMA is silly and we don't get what we want ever. That's just facts.
That's true. That's very true. AK, we'll get your official pick on to the next one tomorrow. But great win for Jessica Andrade. Amanda Lemos goes back to the drawing board. Claudio Poyas, is a silent killer, Jose Youngs. 5 wins in a row. This guy is just submitting guys. The knee bars. This one is about as slick as you can get. It was quick. It was fast. It was explosive. And Clay Guida is a very tough man to submit. And he did all of those things. Your thought on Claudio Poyas' performance and where he may go at 155 pounds?
Bruh, he's probably like right outside of the top 15 right now. I don't know if he gets a top 15 opponent, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because lightweight is so stacked. Like imagine if he fought Thiago Moises. That would be like a grappler's dream. I don't even think Thiago is even in the top 15. So it's like, I don't care who he fights next. It should just be another guy coming off a win, another I want him to fight a recognizable name that can catapult him into the top 15 and at least start to get some respect because he is just so supremely talented. The way he grabbed that knee bar was slick as hell. Like, it just looked like, he was like a Rubik's Cube just... knee bar, great, loved everything about it. That dude is so fun, and like you said, good looking kid, well spoken, speaks Spanish, speaks English. Throw him on the broadcast, make him that much more popular. I think the UFC could have a bona fide star on their hand. I just want to see him fight someone that at least has a name. Like, if you just want to throw him in, like, if you just want to make him the next guy to beat Michael Johnson, Michael Johnson's a guy that people know. This seems to be the path. Like, beat Clay Guida, beat Michael Johnson, beat one other high level guy, now you're top 15. Maybe that's the case. Maybe that happens. I don't know. But, you know, I'm excited. I am very excited to see his next fight.
Yeah, this guy's really impressive.
No one's going to want to fight him. No one wants to fight him after seeing that business. No one wants a piece of the Prince of Peru.
No.
That nickname is happening. That nickname is happening. Prince of Peru is a great nickname. It's way better than a man. It's so good. It's so good. I don't even know what he was. El Nino before. Oh yeah, let's just call
that's
every
bad too. But Prince of Peru is okay. Awful.
Prince of Peru is awesome. People, shout out. People, throw your peas up in the chat if you're down with the Prince.
AK, if you're a Gen Z, you're not going to throw a pee in there because it means something completely different today on this internet. So don't throw a pee.
Oh no, don't throw peas in the chat.
What about a poll?
We have the Prince of Positivity in polls to talk about the Prince of Peru. And it's listen, just, I hate this.
Prince of Peru is a great nickname. Have beef with that. Well, my poll that I have up there right now is what won the weekend, and I can close it now. Fury versus, I'm sure we'll talk about it a bit later, but Fury versus White, 41%. UFC Vegas, 52%, and both Bellator cards. Even, actually, 30% Vegas and 29% for the Hawaii cards. So, really pretty close, actually. And Fury versus White just barely ahead by 10%. So, I think people had a pretty diverse, view of the combat sports weekend. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's because it was also the first events that happened as well. Like, if we close the day with Fury's knockout, like, the poll wouldn't even be close. Be like,
Scritchin, big P. I'm all about that. I'm all about that, Scritchin. Thank you. He's down with the Prince of Peru. He knows what's going on.
It's just no. He doesn't need one. Does he need a nickname? Can he just
a nickname? He's from he's from the same hometown as my mother, Lima, Peru. So, listen, I got to respect it. So I'm down with the Prince of Peru.
Well, you have respect for the Prince of Peru.
Dude's dope, though.
He's a very good fighter.
You know how I know he's dope? Because he fights in the actual best division of the sport, and he's got 5 wins, and he's not anywhere close to a ranking.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I know everyone on this site loves the bantamweight division, but lightweight has been the best division in MMA the last 15 years, and that hasn't changed.
It's been 20 years, probably. Yeah. It's been forever.
Yeah. Division.
The dude is on a 5-fight winning streak and just murdering fools, and he's not he's 2 fights away from a ranking. Like,
yeah,
unbelievable. But I have a question for all of you though, because I actually don't know how I feel. Is that a better submission of the year than Andrade's standing? Because I mean, outside of the thing that we know that the Andrade one was all luck and strength or whatever that insane person told you, Mike.
In terms of technique, it was for sure. Like I said, he snatched that thing up so quick that even Daniel Cormier's head exploded, and you know it's coming, and you still can't stop it. Also, but at the same, like if we're talking about history, like Clay Guida has been stopped before. No one's done the standing arm triangle in like the UFC history. So, in technique wise, knee bar easily takes the cake in terms of like kind of uniqueness. Standing arm triangle is the best.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean the technique of it all was amazing because Clay Guida like got out of the first submission attempt and like you could see it was almost like Clay could feel the momentum changing and he was getting all excited. He was getting that caveman look on his face, like I'm about to start ripping this dude up, and then Poyas like nope. And then it was over. And then he tapped, and it was done. It was so pretty.
Instantaneous. Like, when he set it in, it was immediately there. It's like, oh, we're not working for this. I have your ankle is behind my ear. You're done. It was so good.
That's my number one, the Poyas. That's my number one for now.
Yes, the future is definitely bright for Claudio Poyas. And that leads me to the future. That is what we call a segue in this business. Oh. Macy Barber, a.k.a. got herself a victory, a legitimate win. She's
no
back
controversy.
No controversy here. This is a sweeping of the scorecards against Montana De La Rosa. I feel like this is a perfectly match-made fight for her to do that and get back on track with. Were you impressed with Macy Barber tonight?
Yeah, I was. Montana De La Rosa is a really tough opponent, a little bit older than her, but kind of, you know, in that same age range. So it was good. It was really solid, smart matchmaking, which I think, by the way, was, I would say it was the theme actually of the main card. I thought the main card, I mentioned this in my predictions post, which is was really well done, really well put together. And plus the happy accident that we unfortunately lost of Alexander Romanov versus Chase Sherman. Which is now, by the way, for anyone who missed it, has been pushed to next Friday's card. So we will be getting it soon, fingers crossed. But otherwise, but when that was on there, I'm like, this is a really fun main card. And for the most part, the matchups made a lot of sense. Jordan Venata, I thought Poyas Guida was a really smart test. Andrade Lamoche, I thought would be a little bit closer. But on paper, I thought a really smart matchup. And I feel the same way about Barber and De La Rosa. I think both fighters have a lot of promise. I think De La Rosa has shown a little bit more versatility. She's got some more finishes. But Barbara's the one that's always had kind of the hype and a lot of the, I think people feel sort of the promotional push behind her. And she's a bigger personality than the mic. So you had a lot of contrast going on here. Montana De La Rosa, very soft-spoken. You know, she has personality, but definitely very soft-spoken comparatively. So I love that contrast. I like what I saw from Macy Barber. You know, it wasn't like some amazing, like super impressive, like blowing the doors off performance. But for someone who doesn't turn 24 until next month, you saw legitimate growth. You saw legitimate maturity. I think she still has a long way to go. I don't think we're anywhere near seeing the best version of Macy Barber. And I think if they keep giving her matches like this and booking her in a smart way, this is someone who will, you know, maybe now she has fallen a bit behind some of the newer names like Manon Firo and Aaron Blanchfield and them, even Miranda Maverick, who she quote unquote beat in her most recent fight. I get it. A lot of fresh names will come along, but I feel like Macy is not removed from that conversation. And I think performances like tonight are kind of remind you why she had the hype behind her and why there's still hope that she could get back in that that sort of hyped flyweight cluster.
Yeah, the road's just going to get harder for her. I feel like the UFC kind of already gave her those opportunities to go over the wily veteran with a name with the Roxanne Modafferi fight. Who knows, maybe they throw in there with JoJo Wood or something.
Sure.
I have my own thoughts, which I will reveal on to the next one. So good win for Macy Barber, Montana De La Rosa. We'll see where she goes from here. Jed, how about the Canadian Gilly party? We had Charles Jourdain with the Gilly. We had Marc-Andre Barriot with the Gilly. Nice way to start the main card, was it not?
So I saw exactly zero of the Barriot fight, so I can't speak to that one. I was doing something else at the time. The Jourdain one, great Gilly. I think it was one-armed. I didn't watch the replay multiple times, but at least certainly the setup was him locking that in entirely solo, which is nasty. But honestly, my biggest takeaway is that just before that fight even started, I was like, oh, Lando looks old. Like, I don't know. He just kind of physically looks like he's not there anymore. He very quickly got submitted. And I don't know if those two things are interrelated or if I'm just manifesting something here, but that is my large takeaway from that fight. Great guillotine.
It was. Nicely done. And then before those two submissions happened, we had an absolute banger between Sergey Hondosko and Dwight Grant. Those two went after it. That was a great fight. Got fight of the night. And in the end, Sergey gets the victory. TKO, Dwight Grant falls short. So that's the UFC card. We'll take questions in a minute. But Jose, you are here because you are our biggest boxing enthusiast here on MMAfighting.com.
You're gonna move past the UFC card without saying it? You're not going to talk about it? Come on.
You want to talk about what?
The fight that stole the show? The that opened the show and stole the show, Jay?
Mike Jackson, yes, UFC winner, baby.
Right.
Plus 700 cash.
Four years after his most recent fight, he is officially a UFC winner.
That fight was just hilarious in all senses of the word. And I left that out because I know when we get questions, we're probably going to get about 14 of them.
Just because you wrestle alligators for a living doesn't mean you should have the skin of one. Say goodbye to dry and cracked skin with Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash with vitamin B3. Made for 24/7 renewing moisturization with daily use. With scents of vanilla and shea, people will think you've taken up candle making as one of your hobbies. And there is nothing wrong with that. Old Spice Super Hydration Body Wash. Shop Old Spice now.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house. Everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
I do want to give Tyson Fury his due, and you know, not only what happened in the fight, but what happened after the fight, because I thought that was tremendous too. Jose, Tyson Fury knocks out Dillian Whyte in the sixth round. This was one-way traffic. This fight was not close for a single second. Were you surprised that it was not close for a single second?
I was surprised in the sense that it seems like Dillian Whyte had a real, like, after the, I had it 50-45 going to the sixth round. I think obviously Tyson Fury, as the fight went on, he was finding a lot of success. Though in that fifth round, Dillian Whyte hit a wicked body shot that seemed to kind of halt Tyson Fury, but then he kind of followed up with a couple of big shots. So I felt like Dillian Whyte was maybe about to turn the corner, not win the fight, but maybe win a couple rounds before, like, you know, maybe Tyson Fury either pulled out a dominant decision, like maybe 10-2, 10 or 9-3 or whatever it was. But that first round, when Dillian Whyte came out southpaw, caught me by surprise, and you could see it caught Tyson Fury by surprise. He's like, what the hell do I do with this? Dillian Whyte is not a good boxer when he's southpaw. He's tried it before and it doesn't normally work out, but if he put the time in and he actually came out there and fought Tyson Fury southpaw for the whole fight, I don't know if he was gonna win, because Tyson Fury is the best heavyweight of like the last 20 years. I've said that many times on many shows, but it seems like Tyson Fury was very confused by what was happening, and he won the round, but it wasn't a great round. The whole fight was real kind of gross, not like disgusting, but it was like an ugly fight. It wasn't a high level technical boxing match, and it wasn't the barn burner that was the Tyson Fury Deontay Wilder fights. It was just an ugly fight. There was a weird headbutt, there was a lot of jaw, and the referee was a travesty. He just could not control that fight. He was like arguing with both men. I'm like, get it together, ref, just let him fight, but just give him a warning. But then in the second round, when Tyson Fury came out southpaw and Dillian Whyte came out orthodox, I'm like, what is going on in this fight? This is just the most baffling thing I've seen, because Dillian Whyte at least looks like he confused Fury, like I said. And then he goes, nah, forget this. I can't do this. I'm going to fight orthodox. And then Fury's like, I can actually fight Southpaw and Orthodox because I'm just better than you. And he just pieced him up. So started off very interesting. And then by this third round, I was like, yeah, this is just Tyson Fury just going to smoke him. I expected Dillian White to win maybe a couple rounds in the middle. Didn't even get to that point because Tyson Fury just melted him with an uppercut. Beautiful uppercut. I think that to me, I think a lot of people thought the Jake Paul, people talk about the Jake Paul Tyron Woodley knockout as being like the best knockout of the last few months. But I think we're not talking about Jake Paul the person, just Jake Paul the boxer in that knockout. That's about as clean as a knockout as you can get in the Jake Paul and Tyron Woodley fight. But this knockout was just so much better. Just all around high levels, actual championship at stake, 100,000 people watching that fight. Like, very cool scene, very awesome performance by Tyson Fury, and I do not believe for a second he's going to retire.
Yeah, what I liked about that knockout so much is like Tyson Fury was almost setting it up for five and a half rounds.
If you look at Dillian White's losses, they're all like set up by uppercuts. Like, if I'm going to beat Dillian White, I'm going to let's not say that I would, but like, if I am Tyson Fury and I'm like, what's the easiest path to victory? It's probably just throw an uppercut and knock him dead. And that's what he did.
Yeah. And that, like, this is not like just a sneaky uppercut. This one was like, he like reached down and dug some dirt off the mat
Stevens uppercut right there, baby.
That was Jeremy Stevens uppercut. Tremendous performance. The buzz is in the air. The entrances were great. Very long, but they were great, especially Tyson Fury's. But Jed, what happens after? Tyson Fury's doing the interviews with different sites. He's on the mic. And who does he bring into the ring but UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou, fresh off of surgery, goes down to London, is there supporting a sponsor. At least that's what he said. But Tyson Fury and Francis Ngannou are in there staring each other down, and then they put each other over, and they've cut great promos, a lot of respect there. They want to make this thing happen. We have the heavyweight champion of the world in boxing, the heavyweight champion of the UFC in the ring together trying to make this happen. What was your biggest takeaway from this whole thing?
I'm far from the only person who's been saying it, but I've been saying it the whole time. He ain't coming back to the UFC. This is a fantasy. This whole thing that Dana White and him are going to patch it up, and the UFC are going to know, because why would he give the UFC a cut of that fight? Sure, it's a one-time offer. He can only cash that ticket once. Once he does it, Fury's going to knock him out, and then Ngannou probably can't do the boxing thing. But, you know, when you have a lotto ticket, you cash in the winning lotto ticket. And that's what he's got. He can make maybe $100 million on that fight. I'm not even joking. Like, I think it is very in the realm of possibility for that fight to generate hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue. Because, I mean, just from that, like, I was into it anyway, even though I know the outcome. I'm still into the story. And them in the ring doing that whole thing, it's there. This has the momentum. This is going to be a thing. And they both know it. And so they are both going to do it. Like, they're just going to wait it out until December. And then we're going to do this next summer. And Tyson Fury is going to make, you know, $300 million. And Francis is going to make $100 million. And it's going to be awesome for as long as it lasts.
I'm so happy for this moment. I was waiting for this moment. It's taken us some time, a couple of technical difficulties, switching from one computer to another, my screen freezing, talking over you guys without even knowing it. All this has led to this moment because we did not hear from one man today, and we're going to change that right now. At least we're going to try to put my best friend AK Lee in this man's shoes, conspicuous by his absence at the post-fight press conference. AK was Dana White. No Dana White at the post-fight press conference, AK. So I would like to ask you to put yourself in Dana White's shoes and react to what happened today, seeing your heavyweight champion in London in the same ring with Tyson Fury talking about a potential fight.
Hey, I'm Dana White. Hey, what's this guy doing? Hey, Francis Ngannou, we still under contract. Hey, what's he doing? We got him in a contract for another year. Hey, what's this guy think he's doing? He's just going to go into boxing and not give me a piece of that pie? I tell you, he's no respect. I get no, guys, I get no respect. Dana White over. Ah, man, tell my wife. Am I right? God, no respect. Yeah, listen, I don't think it's going to happen. If they want it to happen, we can talk about it. You know, I made it happen for Conor McGregor. We worked that out. I don't know if Francis thinks he's got some kind of leverage that I don't know about. But you know, we'll talk to Hunter. We'll see if we can make that happen. But God, no respect. I don't know. I don't know how they leave me out of this. Oh, excuse me.
So I'm back, amazing. Guys.
I'm back.
That was so
I'm back.
Wait.
I'm back. Man. It's like you have gone, to like you've yeah.
Gone, you've gotten like you are now you've transformed into this mm-hmm. combination of like if Joe Pesci. And yeah. Rodney Dangerfield had a child. Like that's what sounds like.
You got
a little Pesci in there.
David Sandine, Andrew Dice Clay. Yeah,
Andrew of course. Yeah,
yes. The ice man. Sure. Yeah,
that was well done, AK. Jose, it's so hard to put yourself in Dana's shoes, but you've spoken to the man a few times one on one. What do you think he's thinking right now?
I'm sure he's thinking, well, that sucks because my heavyweight champion of the world is there. But, you know, he's like, well, at least he didn't bring the belt with him. Oh, and looks like he dressed up for the occasion, too. So he's probably very upset that he's not making a boatload of money on this like Conor McGregor. But you know what? I Jose Young's just this is I don't give a F about is Francis Ngannou boxing Tyson Fury. I don't give a damn at all about that fight. That throw that in the bin. I don't care at all. I want to see Tyson Fury fight two men, and that's Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua. And we're not going to pretend that Francis Ngannou Tyson Fury sells more than Tyson Fury versus Anthony Joshua when all the belts are on the line. That's not going to happen because it's not true. We all live in this mixed martial arts fantasy world where Francis Ngannou is this big pay-per-view draw, and if he goes over into the boxing world, he's going to get $100 million. That's not happening. It's not going to happen. Anthony Joshua is the second biggest box office attraction in all of boxing, and he's not even the champion. The biggest draw is Canelo. The biggest thing you can make right now is Conor Canelo. That sells 5 million pay-per-views easy. And that is like being that possibly more, probably more. Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury in Wembley, they're going to have to add seats. If that all the belts, if Anthony Joshua avenges his loss against Usyk and fights Tyson Fury, that you print money. You print money. And also, not for nothing, that's an actual competitive fight against the two best heavyweights in the world. We all talk about how we want boxers to fight the best in the world, and then as soon as an MMA goes, I won't make my boxing anymore. You just say that. I don't care. I want to see the best fight the best, and I want to see Tyson Fury fight Usyk versus Tyson Fury is a pugilistic dream. That is about as high level of a quote-unquote violent chess match as you can get. And then Anthony Joshua, I think actually has – I don't think. I know Anthony Joshua has the tools to beat Tyson Fury. His lack of defense is going to be his downfall. And guess what? That just sets up one of those heavyweight fights that Jed talks about so much where they just clang and bang in there and then someone dies in front of 130,000 people in Wembley Stadium. So Ngannou Fury, throw it in the bin. I hate it. I don't want it. I don't want it at all. I want to see Tyson Fury and Anthony Joshua slash Usyk fight, and then you can make all these stupid fights that everyone wants and is pretending is going to make $100 million because it's not going to happen.
Wow. I wasn't sure what sound effect we were going to get. Your response to that, Jed?
Sure. I agree fully with Jose's contention that the fight is mostly dumb and that Anthony Joshua would make more money. But that fight's not going to happen, and the Ngannou one is, and that's just the world we live in. Like, I take Fury at his word, saying he wants to retire. I could be wrong on that, sure, and I'll hand up if I am. But, like, he told Ariel, you know, a month ago or whatever, I don't want to have real boxing matches anymore, but I'll still do some, like, he's going to do the Floyd thing where he'll take exhibitions or weirdo stuff, fights that he cannot physically lose and still provide an enormous payday. So like 100%, if I had a choice, give me Fury Joshua. But one, if you're, I don't even know if you can run that, if you have to do the Joshua Usyk, and Usyk will just beat Joshua again. So that sucks. And two, like, I just don't think Fury wants to fight Usyk, who, and I don't think Usyk would sell. Maybe I'm wrong there, but that just does not feel like that's a fight that would be, you know, have this gravitas to it. And so instead of not getting to fight Joshua for a number of reasons and not really wanting to, because he just wants to go fight a guy he is going to beat and make similar amounts of money, we're just going to get the Ngannou thing. And look, like I said, I'm for it. I know the outcome. It's kind of dumb, but you can have lots of fun with dumb things. And this one probably won't have this, like, horrific, not even veiled racism permeating every inch of it that Conor Floyd was. So that'd be great. I'd like to not absolutely feel disgusting about myself as I watch some cartoon thing go down. So, you know, like, I'm in on it, and I think that's what's coming. And I'm sorry, because Jose's right. All of the things he said should be how the world works, mm-hmm. but it's not. So here we are.
I still think even if Joshua loses, Fury vacates the belts, he still fights Joshua for no belts. I still think it sells more than the Ngannou fight.
Oh, it does. I just don't think Fury would fight him.
Like, I think he would. I think he would.
I hope he does, because I'm with you. If they did that, and then you can do – because, I mean, Ngannou can't fight.
Also,
because
let's not forget, anyway, this is going to be a stupid hybrid rules fight that they joked about. This is not going to be a boxing match. That's even sillier.
6 ounce gloves or whatever the hell.
Stupid. Stupid.
Just, well, like, if they're, you can have them both.
If they're going to do Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou in one of those goofy triad fights, so be it. But I don't want to see Tyson Fury box any MMA people.
I want to see him do it in the dumbest way possible. I want it to be in a, like, with a moat, and just look, have fun with it.
I'm definitely staunchly against the hybrid concept, because, as people know, I am still trying to get the hashtag keep the martial arts apart movement going. It's not going well. We're not getting a lot of traction with this hashtag. Some people say it's too long. Some people say it's just stupid. It's very hurtful. People are saying a lot of hurtful things about it. But either way, that's why I do want to see the boxing match, because I want to see Ngannou removed from MMA as much as possible if he's to fight Tyson Fury. I'm tired. No one wants to see Francis Ngannou, like, wrestling anymore, or kicking people, or throwing elbows, or doing anything. Keep the martial arts apart. Let's just see. Let's put him in boxing. Let's just see how it goes. Now, again, he'll get straight up annihilated by Tyson Fury. No one is questioning this. But the spectacle of it is very entertaining to me. So I don't like the hybrid idea. I'm all in on a boxing match happening, as unlikely as that is probably to be. Because, as you guys have said many times, there's just so many better options for Tyson Fury if he's serious about making money. And even a fight that, like, is intriguing to him personally, he'd probably rather fight. I think if he can wave a magic wand and pick any opponent, yeah, obviously be Anthony Joshua. That's the one he wants. Well, but I support the idea.
I really think that if Anthony, like, I'm pretty confident that if Joshua wins, we're going to get that fight. So let's not forget, they signed the contract already, and then mm-hmm. Deontay Wilder sued Fury to make the third fight happen. So they already put pen to paper before. And Fury has retired 4 times in his career, and he's come back every time. It's like history repeats itself. History is it's a flat circle, as Sean Alshadi would say, outside of the Footprint Center in downtown Phoenix. Fury's retired many a time. He's always come back. He's already signed on to fight Anthony Joshua. And then he just goes, instead of fighting Joshua, I guess I have to go fist fight Deontay Wilder again and then beat Dillian White, and then he can fight Anthony Joshua. I'm pretty confident that fight is going to happen. Like, Tyson Fury is a carny, that's first right. and foremost, and he'll, because then guess what? I'm out of retirement to fight Anthony Joshua. And everyone's like, oh, the returning champion comes back to avenge. Blah, 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 blah. And then it's even that much more interesting.
You know, 33. And you can have them both. Ngannou can't fight until next summer, basically. So you could do one later this year.
Honestly, even if Usyk wins, I still want to see Usyk. When Usyk wins, I still want to see Usyk and Fury, because that fight freaking rules too.
That fight does rule. I just think Fury has a lot less interest.
If Usyk beats Anthony Joshua and then beats Tyson Fury, he is one of the 7 greatest boxers in the history of boxing. ever. I mean, he would be undisputed in two weight classes.
But I'd like to ask a much more important question. Back to the hybrid rule set, because I want Jose's brain to explode tonight. Instead of doing like the one championship MMA round and thing, because obviously if Ngannou survived a round, he would then take him down and pound him out. What if it was just grappling? So there's no ground strikes. Ngannou has to tap him. And you gave Fury 6 months to like learn some core fundamental defense. That's actually really interesting to me.
I like this. I like this. Because, I want the
martial arts part. Like, if we're gonna round without somebody getting a stoppage, frankly,
If we're gonna do bum ass hybrid rules, I want there to be a quota on things that Francis Ngannou can do in there. Like he gets three elbows through 12 rounds, and he has to ration them.
No ground strikes. It's no striking versus BJJ alternating rounds. Because like Ngannou can tap people. Didn't he tap Blades or whatever? Like.
Hamilton.
That's right. It's not like his bread.
I'm pretty sure Tyson Fury could tap Hamilton. So come on.
Listening to this conversation, like I don't care what happens because we're going to talk about it. We're going to have fun with whatever.
I am literally clutching my pearls at this. That is what I'm doing. I am physically clutching pearls for people who are listening.
But here's what would be hilarious. If they like we just throw everything out the window and they come together and they book like a best of seven. Jose would lose his mind. It'd be like the greatest rant in the history of MMA fighting if that happened. Just something so outrageous.
I would be so mad.
We don't see it twice. We might have to see it four, Jose. And that would be just an amazing rant coming from
me. I would get Guillerme to introduce me to Jose Aldo so Jose Aldo can just kick my leg as hard as he could. Because that would be equivalent to the pain I feel inside.
Yeah, I mean, listen. See, look,
because it's a stupid idea, and we should stop entertaining tomfoolery and let boxers box the best, and MMA fighters fight the best. And then if they want to do cross promotion when it's all said and the dust is settled, there's no one else to fight. So be it. Because like everyone talks about like Floyd fighting Connor made a bunch of money for everyone. And everyone kept saying, oh, you can't pay tuition with legacy. The Joshua fight is both. It makes him more money and it builds his legacy. So there you go. Win or lose, he's going to make a boatload of money. And if he loses to the best. And if he wins, he's top five greatest heavyweights ever. That's the fight. Not this stupid ass Francis Ngannou fight. I'm getting all hot. I'm getting all angry.
For Jen to throw out another idea. What if we did this? Oh man.
Well, I'm thinking on your best of seven series. What if we just got outside the fight world and one of them was then like playing,
like a 5K? Badminton.
Here's what's gonna happen. The next time we see Tyson Fury inside of a ring, it's gonna be a SummerSlam. Next question.
I was why are we not? We haven't even brought up WWE.
No,
yet.
That's a fact. That is going to happen. He already laid it out there. It's going to happen.
Kevin Holland, if you're listening, I know you wanted to do this idea of putting athletes against each other, doing different challenges. Here's the one, buddy. Take this challenge on and create a series of events between
tetherball. Dude, Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou and tetherball would be fire. Jose can't even pretend he wouldn't watch that.
He would watch the hell out of that. He would
get all agitated. No, because I'd be afraid that someone would get hurt and then we wouldn't get to see them fight the best of the best.
Who gets hurt
in a tetherball game?
Hey, it happens. It happens. Tony Ferguson, who blows their ACL out in a TV studio walking? It happens.
No, this is from a man who's a lifelong fan of baseball. This is from a lifelong baseball fan in Jose who has seen the most bizarre injuries that human beings, supposedly high-level athletes, somehow can endure.
What about a home run derby? Home run derby, Tyson Fury versus Francis Ngannou. You wouldn't watch a home run derby between those two?
I would pay them to hit a 70 mile an hour fastball. First person, you get 100 throws. First person to even make contact wins because neither one of those fools can hit a baseball. A Brit and a dude who can't swing a bat, that's not happening. I've seen British people try to play baseball. It's comical.
Oh.
I feel like
there's a video out there of our friend Oscar Willis throwing a baseball. It made it made Uncle Rico look like Tom Brady. I'll say that.
I just want to be clear. We're at the stage of the evening where Jose compares Oscar Willis to Francis Ngannou and Tyson Fury as far as athletics.
So agitated him. You bring up bum ass ideas, my brain gets all discombobulated. There's your word of the day, gentlemen.
Oh, it's the best post fight show ever. I can't wait for BTL to expand upon this topic. But Casey, you're here, which means let's take a few questions. Hopefully about
We'll go to questions. I mean, the questions are all about tetherball. By the way, we only got just tetherball talk.
I want to see Francis Ngannou hit a tetherball.
And he misses. He gets wrapped around his wrist. And he's like, yeah. Okay. Questions. Jeez. here we go.
I mean, if we don't have any questions.
We got a few comments. Yeah.
Incorrect.
Sweet Caroline is an awful song unless it's being played in the seventh inning at Fenway Park.
That's objectively an excellent song. Its association with the deplorable Boston Red Sox notwithstanding. Yeah. But Sweet Caroline is objectively a fantastic song.
Okay. Wrong. Mike Jackson did the right thing.
Hell yeah, he did.
As far as taking a DQ? Yeah, I would if a guy like almost intentionally tried to gouge my effing eye out.
Put two fingers into your eye socket.
The replay looked so bad.
So many times.
Yes, but I mean like if you're Dean Barry and I probably wasn't intentional, but that's almost worse. That means you did something like that and you don't even know how you don't even realize you were doing it. That's almost scarier. You know what I mean? That's like that if I'm his next opponent, I'm like, whoa, he didn't realize he was like reaching up and gouging the other dude's eyes. Like, I don't think I want to be in the cage and hit him with a spin kick to the Yabos. I don't want to fight this guy. Dean Barry, clearly a talented guy, an experienced kickboxer, but boy, you throw him in a cage. You mix in the MMA, and again, you mix the. That's why I keep telling people keep the mix.
You're telling me that someone that's really good at one thing got thrown into another thing, and he wasn't nearly as good, and it was ugly. Shocking, everybody!
If we kept the martial arts apart, Mike Jackson's balls and eye would still be intact. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Jed, go ahead. The spin kick thing. The whole spin kick thing was incredible. They were like, "Please, please turn off the mic," and he just kept dropping f bombs. And then
that's what. So like, if you watch Casey, I know when we used to do the coffee talk after the pay per views, and I remember bringing this up for the Gaethje Ferguson fight when I was there in Jacksonville, and it was like me, John Morgan, and like that was it. That was the only media that was sat Octagon side. The thing that stood out to me the most, that was the most jarring in an empty arena, was when Justin Gaethje got hit in the cup, and his screams of pain were like burned into my brain because you don't normally hear that when there's 20,000 people screaming around you.
But did he have the Diamond MMA Cup that Joe Rogan has been hawking for years?
I don't know. I don't listen to Joe Rogan in 2022.
You know who was wearing a Diamond Cup? MMA. I think, and I know this unfortunately, I think Lando was wearing a Diamond MMA Cup because he got pants during the fight, if you remember.
Oh,
he did.
You know what's crazy?
Let's just talk about how humiliating that loss was. Not only did you get choked out in like 2 minutes, you got pants.
Literally got shorts.
You know what's crazy too? Going back to the Bellator thing, Rufian Stotts is like 4 years older than Lando Venata. That's how like it looks very bizarre how Lando looked.
You're right. One more thing about the Dean Barry Mike Jackson thing. In case anyone's wondering, Dean Barry is not super apologetic about it. He posted a video on his own social media.
I saw that.
Saying he said he thought that Mike Jackson took the easy way out. And again, I think when you gouge another man in the eye, maybe don't say that.
He is by definition correct because it is much harder to fight a man with zero cojones and one eyeball after he has removed them both.
Yeah.
Much more difficult to fight a man in those circumstances.
Maybe that's what he was saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the worst. Yeah, that was not an eye poke. That was a gouge. Yeah, so that's it's a very
big
difference.
That was like
difference.
Worse than the cachoeira, like, you know, thumb. That was bad.
Yeah, yeah. I hope he what's next for Mike Jackson? Is that gonna be talked about on to the next?
You.
Is it you?
Oh yeah.
30-24, baby.
I'm going down to 160. If we can catch weight 160, me and Mike Jackson we'll both make some bread, you know, so yeah, who knows?
Eagle FC.
Media versus media.
Mike Jackson should just call it a day. And just ride off into the sunset with, like, the eyes of everybody who watched these fights with awesome. Two victories in a row.
He got two checks tonight. Mike Jackson got two checks tonight. Congratulations.
What were the odds again?
Mike Jackson was plus 700 underdog.
Is that the biggest upset of the year in MMA?
I think so.
By the numbers? Probably. Yeah.
I can't remember off the top of my head.
It's got to be up there. Baby. Yeah.
It's certainly up there.
Biggest since Big Tuna.
Yeah, well, at least in the UFC. So yeah, so there's Sarah GSP, and then right below that is Mike Jackson, Dean Barry.
When Tuna beat Christian Edwards last year, ridiculous numbers.
No, because homegirl Julian Pena closed at a pretty high number. Was she at $1,000?
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure.
She was going back up there.
If you like to bet money, I'll just say use code word the MMA hour on DraftKings, win a bunch of money, and then donate it to comic books for kids so kids can read comic books while they get cured from cancer. Do good things with your money, because money is not a toy. Next question.
There we go.
I can't buy toys though. For kids.
Claudio Pueyas a threat at lightweight. That's five in a row, and he doesn't have a number next to his name. We kind of talked about this, but I have a really good matchup for onto the next one that I think a lot of people
Is it Alexander Hernandez?
It is not Alexander Hernandez.
Wow.
Alexander Hernandez should be fighting Paddy Pimblett. That's the
yeah, I was going to say.
Happening. this is way better than Alexander Hernandez. I'll tell you that right now. Jose, you would appreciate this, Jose, because I know you're a big fan of this guy.
All right. I am waiting on bated breaths for the next episode of On to the Next One.
Another surging lightweight who may or may not have had childhood dreams of being a professional skateboarder sometime.
Well, that would be a scrap. That would be a scrap.
We've done this for an hour and 20 minutes, and it is 3 a.m. on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Dude, so
go to bed.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to play my favorite song.
Hit the music.
Is it Sweet Caroline?
No, I can sing it if you want.
You know, you guys know what Sweet Caroline's about?
It's Sweet Caroline?
Good times, never feeling so good.
Is this like my Sharona?
It is literally about Caroline Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's daughter.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
The more you know. You guys learned a lot today. You learned about what that song's about. You learned about stupid hybrid fights. And you learned about the boxing matches that should happen in the world.
And the dangers of tetherball.
About a potential $100 million tetherball matchup between Tyson Fury and Brandon
McGrath. I stand by it. That tetherball game would bull.
I'm down.
All right. AK and I back tomorrow for on to the next one. For AK, for Jed, for Casey, for Jose, I am Mike Heck. Apologies once again for the technical difficulties. Good night, everybody.
Love you guys.
Happy birthday, AK.
Nope.
Nope.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.